Earlier this spring, my wife TC and I had the chance to spend 2 months studying Spanish at a language school in Cusco, Peru. Now, Cusco was the capital of the ancient Incan Empire when the conquistadors arrived in South America in the 1530s, and they took it for their own. The city is a fascinating mix of Incan heritage overlaid with Spanish language and culture. We found it to be an overwhelmingly friendly city, and not only because we were gringos from America del Norte. It's full of bright colors, of fruits and vegetables and clothing, and it's also full of all of the pollution and poverty of a developing country. I loved walking the old narrow streets that sometimes go straight uphill as the city climbs 600 feet from the valley up to the ancient ruins at Sacsayhuaman, just outside of town. One afternoon, I was out exploring up around the hills outside of town, and I was starting to get hungry. Now, before I go on, there are a couple of other things that you need to know about Peru. One is that you don't ever flush your toilet paper down the toilet because it will wreck their plumbing system. Another is that you don't ever drink the water there because it will wreck your plumbing system. You throw your used toilet paper in the waste basket next to the toilet, and you don't drink anything that isn't bottled or boiled, or nobody's plumbing system is going to be happy. The other thing is that there is garbage everywhere in the city, especially on collection day. There are no trash cans outside, so everybody just tosses their bags of garbage into piles into the street, where dogs tear through it. And then the garbage truck comes along, and the masked women following the truck all sweep it up and dump it into the back of the truck until next time. Now, you need to understand, I love the city. And without exception, I found the people there to be open and engaging. And I learned so much, far beyond the 6 weeks that we actually spent in the language school. But I also knew that I had to keep my privileged Fort Collins values and perspectives about cleanliness in check, which I wasn't always successful in doing. And this brings me back to my story. I'd been climbing around the hills and taking pictures of the streets and rooftops, and I was on my way back home. I was getting hungry, and I was hoping for something sweet and full of carbs when I saw a small bakery shop just ahead. I walked inside, and there, sitting behind a glass counter, was a small pie, just the right size for a snack. On one side of the pie were various sugar-sprinkled pastries, and on the other side, there were cheese breads and sandwiches and empanadas. The small pie in the middle could be either sweet or it could be savory, but I couldn't be sure. So summoning all of the Spanish I knew, which was about 3 weeks' worth at this point, I tried to remember the word for sweet, which I figured was related to the word sugar. The baker walked up to the counter while I was trying to figure this out, and he stood there, and I blurted out the first thing that came to mind. Esta torta, esta sucio? The baker looked at me somewhat confused, and I pointed to the pie again. I said, ¿está sucio? He looked at me with furrowed brows. Some of you are getting this. He looked at me with these furrowed brows, and I suddenly remembered that the word sucio means dirty. In other words, I was asking him, this pie, is it dirty? He scowled, and I expressed my embarrassment in that universal language which is known as a facepalm. And he burst out laughing, no, no, es limpio, it's clean. He laughed again, and I joined in and apologized. Disculpame, por favor. And a moment later, I walked out of the bakery with what turned out to be a really tasty fruit pie, just the right size. As I said, the Peruvians were unfailingly open and friendly, a lovely people, even to Norteamericanos who inadvertently and wrongly expressed their privileged perspectives. But beyond this humorous anecdote, I see this as a story of humility and grace. Humility on my part in recognizing that I had really put my foot in it, and grace on the baker's part in accepting my mistake with good humor. And both humility and grace and humor are intrinsic to what it means to be human. Humble, human, humor. It seems like these three words should be connected, and to a certain extent they are. The words humble and human both come from a Latin origin, meaning of the earth, like the word humus. From dust we have come, to dust we shall return, as the Bible tells us. And there's a lot of truth to that. Remembering this keeps us humble. For the most part, reminding us that we are human and we're all prone to making mistakes. The word humor, however, has a different origin. It comes from Middle English, and it used to mean moisture or fluid, like the word humid. Originally, the physicians of old thought that human nature depended on the balance of four humors, or bodily fluids. They were blood and bile and piss and snot. I can say that from the pulpit here. Wow. Someone whose fluids were out of balance was considered to be ill-humored. And I guess it's no coincidence that so much childhood humor is about blood and bile and piss and snot. And in a similar vein, we adults also tend to make fun of those things that we don't like to talk about in polite company, like doctors and lawyers and death and politics. Actually, I don't think it's much of a coincidence at all. Because just as our original good humor depended on a balance between our bodily fluids, a lot of our humor today depends on what is out of balance in our lives. The silly inconsistencies in life, like for instance, why is the third hand on a watch called the second hand? I honestly don't know. And for you millennials out there, I'm talking about one of those watches with numbers on a dial and everything. Sometimes what's out of balance is our relationships. I suppose that's why we have so many mother-in-law jokes. You know, like the reason that Adam and Eve were the happiest couple in history is because neither of them had a mother-in-law. Now, some of us here are mothers-in-law, I recognize. And I also realize that humor can be used to wound, to denigrate, and to even dehumanize others. It can be used to divide people, like between those who appreciate a good off-color joke and those who don't. It raises the question, is there even such a thing as a good off-color joke? And just because we see ourselves on the side of peace, love, and understanding, doesn't mean that we don't indulge in a little Stephen Colbert or laugh at a certain orange-haired Facebook meme from time to time. We have to. We have to, because if we didn't laugh occasionally, we would cry a lot more. Actually, I think there's a direct relationship between our humor and our pain. Think about it. Almost all slapstick humor and practical jokes depend on someone getting hurt or embarrassed. As the great science fiction writer Robert Heinlein observed in his classic novel, Stranger in a Strange Land, "I found out why people laugh," one of its characters says. "They laugh because it hurts, because it's the only thing that will make it stop hurting." "Find me something that makes you laugh," he continues. "Something that gives you a hearty laugh and not just a smile. Then look and see if there isn't a wrongness, or at least a strangeness there, and whether you would laugh if that wrongness or strangeness wasn't there." Maybe that's why the word funny has two meanings: funny as in humorous, or funny as in strange or ironic. Now, humor is a natural and even a healthy response to the human condition, the wrongness and the imperfections in our lives, and the certainty of our eventual death. Maybe that's why we have a lot of jokes about death, like the one about the guy whose father died suddenly in an accident at home. "The paramedics came," the guy says, "but nobody could remember his blood type. But our dad was brave till the end. He kept telling us to be positive." Be positive. He kept telling us right up until he died. See, you too can laugh in the face of death. But the truth is that humor is the one thing that can help us be positive and to find the saving grace in what might otherwise be tragic circumstances. Maybe that's why so many of our funerals have as much laughter as they have tears. As the young adult novelist Veronica Roth has said, "Sometimes crying or laughing are the only options left. And laughing just feels better right now." Humor is healing. It connects us with one another and can help us see ourselves and each other in a new light, even in the most terrible of situations. The Archbishop Desmond Tutu tells a story of visiting Rwanda shortly after the genocide of 1994, when nearly a million Tutsi inhabitants were slaughtered by their neighbors. Sometime after the killing had stopped, Archbishop Tutu was asked to address a gathering of Tutsi and Hutu people, of victims and perpetrators alike, to see if they could begin the process of healing. How could he begin to address the horror and the pain that was still so fresh among the people? Rather than addressing the story directly, he began by telling a story about the big nose people and the little nose people, and who thought who smelled funny, and whose noses were too sensitive. And soon, the whole crowd was laughing together. And that's when he knew the hard work of healing could begin. And the moral of the story, of course, is that you can pick your friends, or you can pick your nose, but don't pick your friends by their noses. But truly, humor is healing in a very physical sense as well. Norman Cousins, a Unitarian Universalist author and social activist during much of the last century, was diagnosed with a rare, painful, and crippling disease from which he was told there would be no recovery. Deciding that he had nothing to lose, he developed his very own recovery program, which included massive doses of vitamin C and watching Laugh-In and Candid Camera and as much comedy as he could find. In his book, Anatomy of an Illness, he writes, "I made the joyous discovery that 10 minutes of genuine belly laughter had an anesthetic effect and would give me at least 2 hours of pain-free sleep. When the pain-killing effect of the laughter wore off, we'd switch on the movie projector again, and not infrequently it would lead to another pain-free interval." You know, even if we're not in a place in our lives where we can or want to sit down and spend our days laughing at sitcoms, internet memes, or stupid cat videos, we should remember that simply smiling is one of the few practices where fake it until you make it is literally true. Even if you don't feel like talking to someone, you can offer a stranger a smile, and there's a good chance that you'll get one in return. And if not, you can at least take comfort in the fact that they're probably having a worse day than you are. But the thing about a smile is that you can give it away over and over again, and some people will start to smile back. And isn't that a beginning? I'll show you mine if you show me yours. It works. I'd like to close with a prayer from the Unitarian Universalist minister Kit Ketchum, who currently is serving a small fellowship on the coast of Oregon. I think it'll help put all of this into perspective. "To whom it may concern, ground of all being, source of all light, divine daddy, or whatever, help us to relax about insignificant details, beginning tomorrow at 7:41 in the morning. Help us to consider other people's feelings, even if most of them are hypersensitive. Help us to take responsibility for our own actions, even though they're not usually our fault. Help us try not to run everything, but if you need some help, feel free to ask. Help us to be more laid back and to do it just right. And give us patience, Lord, like now. Help us to do only what we can and trust you for the rest, but put that in writing, please. And help us be open to others' ideas, as wrong as they may be. In the name of everything, amen, shalom, and blessed be."